Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Welcome now to Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemenManiacs.com. And this is a special, I wish we could do them all like this. We get to watch a game and then run over to the Wired Coffee House and talk about it. So pretty good game, 4-2 loss for the Icemen. We'll recap the whole week. Michael, how you doing?
Fantastic. My ears are still ringing.
Yeah, holy moly, 9,000 kids.
Yeah, I feel like I just left a Justin Bieber concert. It's been over an hour now since the game ended, and my ears are, I'm still, whew.
Yeah, it was funny. There was like people, some little kids behind us trying to get that Let's Go Iceman chant going, and I was just thinking, like, are they, like, what were the Wizard of Oz munchkins? Do I have munchkins behind us? It sounded just like munchkins. Let's go Iceman! It was, brutal.
Yeah, it was
wonderfully brutal.
Yeah, it was very, very, very loud, but it's really cool. It was so cool. During the first intermission, I was walking through the concourse and I looked out and you see there's just school buses everywhere. I've never seen so many school buses. They're blocking Locust in front of the center and they're running all the way down Martin Luther King, and they had a whole block of 6th Street completely blocked off both directions. They were like three wide.
Yep.
It was crazy. Awesome. Yeah, but it was really cool. The kids had fun. They don't care that the team lost.
Nope.
They had a good time.
2-1 in this last three-game stint. They get the win against Trenton. Whoop, I'm off. They get the – what month are we even in?
This is November.
And here, I asked for the schedule, and I'm still messed up.
Wheeling.
They get the win. They get the win up in Toledo, and then they lose today. What do you got for us?
I thought Friday, the first win of the season, was awesome. It was like a playoff atmosphere. There was only about 4,000 people there. I think the announced attendance was 3,997 or something like that. But
so there was 1,800 there.
It was probably at least 3,500 butts in the seats. It was a pretty good crowd, but it was like a game seven in the playoffs. They were loud and into it and upbeat, and it was a really cool atmosphere. It was louder and more entertaining than opening night when we had 8,800. It was a heck of a game. And toward the end, it was like everyone was on pins and needles waiting for the other shoe to drop when the Icemen were up late, and hoping beyond hope that we would hold on and win. And thankfully, you know, we did. And it was 4-3, and the music guy played Hallelujah, and the fans were – it was like an immense sense of relief because, you know, everybody was happy. But at the same time, it just felt like there was this weight off of everyone's shoulders that, thank God, we finally won a game. Now we can move on. And
that was the reason why I went with the three-game winning streak prediction, because I knew – I just had a feeling about playing at home, and I know this team's just going to get better as they practice more. But I knew as soon as that weight came off the shoulders, I knew it would carry them into the next game. And sure enough, in Toledo, Saturday night, even though they started behind one goal, once they got the lead, they really dominated. And even before I was listening to the Toledo broadcast, and the announcer was like, this Iceman team is not playing like their 1-6-1 record. So I knew this team just really needed a jolt of confidence.
Yeah, and I think that's why people were getting so frustrated when the team started 0-6-1. It's not like you could see the team and go, oh, well, we just don't have the talent to compete. You knew the potential was there. It was just a matter of realizing that potential, putting it all together, and playing a full 60 minutes and winning a game that you're capable of winning.
Power play looks a lot better. The acquisitions we made, we talked last week about Madaisky.
Austin Madaisky. How they say it.
Okay.
So that's what we'll go with.
And actually, I've been practicing it. And then Moon coming in as well, too, and Weber. We talked about Weber and Madaisky last week. Now we get Moon this past Thursday. And they're all playing some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, Medeski in particular impressed me from the get-go. When he was slotted in there on the point on the power play with Phil Plant out with back spasms, him and Matt Jens were on the blue line for the first power play unit. And Medeski, he has a cannon of a shot, and he looks very comfortable back there, which isn't always the case with a rookie, even if you have a guy that has that kind of talent. Put him out there in the pros, and sometimes they look a little in over their head, but he does not. He looks 100% comfortable out there, and he is quarterbacking the power play and drawing the PK guys out to him, creating lanes for guys to work down low with Todd Robinson seeing passing lanes. And you could see immediate results on Friday. They went 4-for-8 on the power play. I don't remember the last time we scored 4 power play goals in a game. Well, the way this season's going, it's just to score 4 goals, period, in a game is impressive. But it's the power play looks light years better with Medeski back there. He's certainly got the talent to stretch things out and make things happen. And he's, like I said, he's got a cannon of a shot, too. He had a post today.
Yeah, and I don't know how, and I was at the other end of the rink, how that one did not go in.
Yeah.
I mean, because it hit post, and then it went back through the crease, and I actually was the only person in my section that jumped up thinking it was a goal, and then there's a stoppage of play. I'm like, how did that not go in?
Yeah, it was close. It clanged off the post, and it sat there, and it was one of those things where it's in super slow motion. You see the puck there, and there's about 4 guys around it, and you think somebody needs to just hit it in. And the guys are wailing away and trying to fight for it, and no one could.
Now, did they also get 2 power play goals against Toledo Saturday night, or is it just 1?
They went 4-for-8 on Friday and 2-for-4 on Saturday. So
and then they got it 1 today as well.
Yeah, they were 1-for-7 today. So it was 12.5% entering the weekend, and then they went 50% over the weekend, 6-for-12 overall. And then today they were only 1-for-7, but they had that post was on a power play, too, and a couple other really good chances.
And then 2 of the the 1 power play was canceled because of too many men on the ice.
Yeah.
So that's just a horrible bench thing.
Yeah.
And then another one, there is probably 2 other ones where the penalties kind of got stacked. So the true power play was only about 25 seconds.
Yeah.
So they were more likely 1-for-4, 1-for-5 if you want to keep the too many men.
That's something that I've always thought. We have all these advanced statistics now in sports, and I would really like to see power play success and PK success too change where instead of saying you're 1-for-7, it would be an average of how much power play time per goal scored or something. Because especially since the NHL lockout, there's been such an emphasis on calling obstruction penalties, and you're just getting more power plays every game. And you get a lot of those overlaps where you're getting a power play for 15 seconds, but it counts as a full power play opportunity. And I think the numbers at times can be kind of misleading because, you know, if it's 15 seconds without a goal, that counts the same as 2 full minutes without a goal.
And even if you keep the penalty that we shot ourselves in the foot with the too many men, it's still 1-for-5. It's still 20%. That's still super solid.
Yeah, that's a definite step up from 12.5%.
Yep. So they get the win Friday night. They get the win Saturday against Toledo. They lose today. Who did we play? Greenville.
The Greenville Road Warriors.
Jeez, I'm just struggling. They look awesome.
Yeah.
And they've got, what's his name? Kendall McArdle. It was a first-round draft pick of the Florida Panthers. He wears number 23. Check him out tonight, Wednesday night, if you're coming out to the game. But he's a first-round pick. He's got first-round talent. He's played himself down to this level, a la P.O. Peltier did, but he's still, I mean, you just watch him skate out there. When his line came out, the Icemen were in trouble. Whatever D pairing was back there, we couldn't get the puck out of the zone, and that's just the difference. This is a really good team, and they have a player that is, he's first-round talent.
Yeah, he had 5 points in 4 games entering today, and you don't do that without talent.
Yeah. One of the other things I wanted to bring up was the deep pairing of Tetro Blomqvist, which is just Crom goes to it quite a bit. They saw a lot of time in the first and second period today. They are feast or famine. They are. Did Tetro get the last goal? I was actually
he had the assist on it. He shot it and it was tipped.
But
he last.
Awesome. I like Shelast. Boy, how about that? Who did they come out with? Mahovsky, Cody, and Shelas?
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of hate on Blades right there.
Yeah, you thought that was going to get nasty, and then they didn't fight right away.
So I like that line a lot. But Tetro Blomqvist, you were talking about how big Blomqvist is. He throws his body around. Tetro, I think, is another great puck-moving, offensive-minded defenseman. They play well together, but boy, if they have trouble getting... And part of it, too, might be with forward pairings that they've got in front of them, but they really do struggle getting the puck out of the zone.
Yeah, there are times when you see them have an opportunity and you can see a lane, and obviously you see things differently from the stands than you do from on the ice, but yeah, there are times when you see what they should do, and then you see what they do, and you just wonder where the disconnect is there. Like, they're not seeing the ice well, or I don't know. And sometimes Tetro sees what he needs to do and then tries to do it and whiffs. And it's like he's got butter on his stick at times. But he's going to be out there regardless of how he plays. I mean, with Plant out, Tetro was the second alternate captain.
Yep.
And that, to me, that's proof that as long as he's healthy, he's going to be in the lineup.
Yeah, I noticed that too, and I thought it was a good pick. I wasn't surprised the way Crum has been playing him all week. We had 9,349 at the game today.
9,381,
and it was loud.
It
and
was
the
crazy.
Whole the two favorite things was they played the Bieber song, and everyone knows it, and that Gangnam Style thing. I have no idea what that even is. I'm out of the loop.
It's quite possibly the stupidest thing ever.
But 9,000 kids know what it is, and they were all dancing, and it was hilarious.
Yeah, you should have seen it Friday at the game against Wheeling. They played that Gangnam Style song during the second intermission during Chuck-a-Puck cleanup.
Uh-huh.
So you've got, and it was mascot night. So you've got about 12 mascots out there and about 100 kids cleaning up the Chuck-a-Puck from the Blizzard's Buddies Kids Club, and they start Gangnam Style. And all of a sudden, the puck cleanup ceased because about two-thirds of the kids and several of the mascots are doing the ridiculous dance that goes to that song. But it was hilarious to see. Chuck-a-Puck cleanup, oh well, that we can do that later. We've got music to dance to right now, and that's awesome.
We want to thank the Iceman organization for putting the education day together. It's a great thing for the kids. They still don't have all the bugs worked out. We've seen some of it posted on the Maniacs Asylum. It affected my family, as a matter of fact. We've talked about the Iceman organization before. Sometimes they just really struggle with communication. And I think the most disappointing thing is multiple schools received confirmation that, yes, we got your information, bring your kids, and then they were denied later on with an email and even denied at the door today.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's a wonderful promotion. It's awesome that you have 9,400 people there on a Tuesday, because without Education Day, you're never going to get 9,400 people there on a Tuesday. It doesn't matter what other promotion you've got. So it's an awesome promotion. It's really fun for the kids. But yeah, there are definitely some kinks that need to be worked out, and it primarily is communication. And people talk about, well, you know, mistakes happen, but it's not really a mistake. It's just a flat-out error when you tell someone you're confirmed when they're not actually yet confirmed. So that type of stuff, this is the second year that they've done this. You hope by next season, A, they haven't run people off that would otherwise want to come, and B, they'll work out the rest of the kinks and it'll go smoother. I will say that just logistically, it has to be a nightmare to put on this event. With the size of the staff the Icemen have, you know, there's less than a dozen people. People may not realize that, but there's less than a dozen full-time employees in this team. And when you're talking about bringing kids from all over the place, all these different schools for a day game,
trying to sit them all together, working in season ticket holders and walk-up ticket sales.
Yeah, it's I certainly wouldn't want to do it, but there are things that they could do better that would help themselves that, you know, they're not necessarily just mistakes. It's just logistical things that aren't really done to peak performance that you hope they can improve on that in the future. But overall, it was an awesome event. It's so much fun to see all those kids having a good time, and they love not being in school, and it certainly lifts the players up. Obviously, they didn't get the win this time, but it's got to be cool when you come out on a Tuesday. You figure if it's a night game, you're going to have 3,000 people there maybe, but instead you're playing on a Tuesday in front of 9,000 people, and it was crazy loud.
Our next segment here is Shockers Hockey rock song of the week.
I love your intro for that. I feel like I'm...
It's the only thing I haven't screwed up yet.
Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week this week. I think this is my civic duty as a born and raised Hoosier. I was born in Indianapolis. I moved to Evansville for college, and I've been here ever since. So I think it's in my blood that I am required at some point, and probably early and often, to play some John Mellencamp.
Oh, yes, of course.
So this
week, is actually a major problem between me and my wife. I'm not a big Mellencamp fan.
Well, get out.
Get out of our state.
I'm flying solo. You're not allowed to do this show anymore. You're not allowed to step foot on Indiana soil. John Mellencamp, and this is a song. I guess it's sort of a patriotic song. At least the title sounds patriotic, so it's fitting that today, as we record this, is Election Day, and we got Veterans Day coming up. So I guess put your red, white, and blue on and stand up and sing along. This is John Mellencamp, ROCK in the USA.
We're back here with Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. Please check out all of the stuff he has here. The best hockey coverage in the Evansville area, hands down.
Well, some might say it's the only hockey coverage.
And
so
you could do that.
I'm number one by default.
Especially if the team's out of town, because if they're out of town, Courier Press isn't going to cover it.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do in a major market.
Yeah.
When your pro team goes out of town, just don't write anything.
There's more important things to cover. I mean, we got to talk about high school cross country and stuff like that. That's really important stuff.
It is important stuff for those kids, but for the love, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, always go to the Iceman Maniacs. Get your update. You wanted to hit on Friday a little goal situation that you wanted to clarify.
Yeah, Friday during the game against Wheeling, early in the third period, there was a situation where Wheeling thought they scored. I don't know that they really thought they scored, but the referee thought they scored. The puck got behind the goalie and was treading along the goal line, hit the post, and never actually went in. On the play, the referee was screened by a couple of players, and just between when he saw it and when he didn't, he thought the puck went in, and he stopped play and called goal. Well, the Iceman immediately argued, and the referee talked to the linesman, and the linesman basically must have said, I don't think it went in either. So the referee smartly talked to the goal judge. Well, in the old days, there was a hole in the glass behind each net, and the ref would just skate over there and talk to the goal judge through the hole. Well, they don't do that anymore. They actually have headsets that the goal judges are on headsets, and the referee can get on the goal judge or on the headset in the scorer's box, and they can talk that way. Well, as he was talking to the goal judge on the headset, they were also showing replays of the play on the Jumbotron. And I think a lot of people in attendance assumed there was some sort of video review going on, and that that's why the referee ended up overturning his own call and saying no goal. When in reality, it wasn't a video review. There is no video review in the ECHL. It was just that the goal judge told him, flat out, the puck didn't go in. He explained the situation and said it was in front of the goal line, and then it hit the post, and then it was out. It never went in. Referee took the goal judge at his word, reversed his call, and it had nothing to do with the replays that were shown on the Jumbotron. Now, it was convenient timing that everyone else in the building saw that it indeed was not a goal, which basically meant that if the referee had ignored the goal judge and continued to say it was a goal, there would have been a small riot.
Yes.
But yeah, I just wanted to clarify for anyone that didn't realize it, there is no video review. That was just the referee talking to the goal judge, which is standard procedure.
You also wanted to mention Peoria and some of the struggles. And here we go again. We talk about the last few weeks about being affiliated with the AHL and the NHL and how awesome it is. But here, there's, you know, every sword has two sides to it. Everything is a pro and a con, and the Peoria situation may affect us negatively.
Yeah. It's great to be affiliated when you get guys sent down and you'll see talent that you wouldn't otherwise see. But then on the flip side, when they have injuries or if they have struggles and they have to call guys up, then you may be on the short end of the stick. And that's kind of what's happening now. We've already seen the Rivermen have called up Sonny and Shattuck. Last week they called up, or actually earlier this week, I think, they called up Cody Beach, which leaves Paul Karpowicz, the goalie, as the only Blues prospect that's still here in Evansville. And on top of the fact that they've already called these guys up, they're searching for answers. The Rivermen are 2-5-2. They've only scored 13 goals in 9 games. And that's by far the most anemic offense in the AHL. They've lost 4 games in a row, all at home, and 3 of those were via shutout. So they are really...
You want to talk about having a hard time selling tickets.
Yeah, they are really struggling. So they've already called up all the forwards that we had here that are their property. So if they continue to struggle, we could very well see them dip into some of the Evansville contracted talent. You know, they can't, obviously, they can't call up the guys that are Columbus Springfield property. But guys that are Evansville property, guys like Todd Robinson and Dan Gender that have the numbers in there and the experience to back it up, if Peoria continues to struggle and they can't figure out a way to light the lamp, they very well may purchase the contract, quote-unquote, of an Iceman contracted player and see if they can get answers that way, because they're not just going to keep on going. You can't get shut out 3 out of 4 at home and be happy with what's going on. You're going to have to make some changes and try to throw something else at the wall and see if it sticks.
Dan Gender played today. He's done with his 3-game suspension. One of the things I want to talk about is we need to get him going. I'm not going to do the fair weather fan thing. He's not hustling. He's looking for some chemistry. He's looking for somewhere, and we've got to figure out a way. I mean, he's supposed to be the big ticket guy. I believe he can be. One of the things I thought was good was you can see more and more of Crom's coaching style coming through all the lines. And I saw Gender, Crom likes from time to time to run that torpedo pass. That's what the Swedes use in their for their Olympic teams, which is you send one of your off wingers to the far blue line, and he cuts all the way across, and now your defenseman has a typical breakout option of, you know, going to the short boards to break it out, or you can make the 150-foot stretch pass to your winger, and if you connect on that, a lot of times you'll get a breakaway or a one-on-one chance, and I saw Gender doing it. And for years, I've watched at practice and scrimmage games, Cody and Robinson, they work that, and they even, you know, Bicek started running it for 2 years too. But it is, you can't use it all the time because teams catch up onto it, but it's just nice to see it pop out every once in a while. And I knew Cody would start running it. I wasn't surprised when Cody got put into the lineup on Friday, but I thought it was cool that Gender was doing it. And so you're starting to see the Crom teaching, the Crom system is taking place, but still we got to get him going. We got to find some connection, some center to work with him or something to get him fired up.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that stretch play is something that that's where you miss a guy like Steve Macway. That was probably last year. That was his biggest plus, was that he was excellent at seeing the lane and seeing the guy that was behind the D and finding him. And I don't know that we really have a defenseman so far, at least, that can see that play and make it happen. I like the idea of doing it, and I like that Gender has picked up on that part of Crom's system. But if you don't have a defenseman who can get the puck to you, then if we turn it over, then you've got a 5-on-4 situation in your own end. So it carries its risk.
Yes, it does.
And it can pay off big time if it works. But if it doesn't work, then you end up with an odd man rush going the other way. So it's one of those things where if it does work well, though, it's a great tool to have in your toolbox.
And maybe something, too, if and when Phil Plant comes back. He's missed three games now with the back injury. He, you know, he's part of that Crom system. He's one of the Crom's guys, and he may be able. That might be the only thing, is if Plant comes back and he sees Gender, he trusts Gender's going to be out there. That might be all this team needs, and now we've got a second line that's exploding. But this power play is awesome. It's going to keep us in games, but we still need to get all three lines firing.
Yeah, yeah, I really like the power play unit with Medeski and Matt Jens on the point. I think that should remain the number one D pairing on the power play, even once Plant comes back. Plant can come in then and be the quarterback of the second power play unit.
With Tatrill.
Yeah. The question is then, when Plant comes back, when he's healthy, who do you take out?
Yeah, and it's one of the questions we talked about, having such a full roster.
Yeah.
And we like to throw those kind of questions out to the fan. Like we've talked about before with the Fairweather fans and the crying, I have no problem saying Todd Robinson has to go. I have no problem hearing that Coach Crom needs to be fired. But back it up with hockey. Tell me who you're going to bring in and why and what the difference is. But this is an interesting question. Who would you bench when Phil Plant is healthy? Because you know he's going in the lineup.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know. I don't know. Based on the play, what we've seen, I don't know that any of the six that played today really deserve to be taken out. Maybe the weakest link is Blomqvist, but I like in general.
But he's the big guy.
Right. He's
PK.
Huge. I saw him in the locker room between periods, and I was walking behind him, and I'm 5'10", and my line of sight was below the nameplate on his jersey. That man is enormous, and I can't imagine being an opposing winger in front of our net on a power play or otherwise trying to fight for position with that man. Because, I mean, I would wave a white flag and just go back to the bench. There's no way. But I don't know who you would take out when Plant comes back. But someone will be taken out because there's no way when he's healthy, there's no way Plant's not going to be in the lineup. And at the same time, what happens when Perrin gets healthy again?
Yep.
I found out today that he actually has a broken bone in his foot. And he had been playing through it and thought it was just hurt. And then when the pain didn't go away, they finally did x-rays and found out that he has a broken bone in his foot. So we don't know how long he's going to be out. But unless there are other injuries that open up spots in the lineup, Plant's going to come back soon. His back spasms aren't going to last forever. And at some point, too, Perrin's going to be healthy again. And the question is, who do you take out? It's easy to look at the lineup and say, well, you know, they need to do this and they need to do that. But you have to have – it's a two-way street. You can't say they need to put someone in without saying who needs to come out, and vice versa. If you want to take someone out, like you know, the Todd Robinson critics, if you want to say Todd shouldn't be in there, well, who are you going to put in that's going to have better performance than what he's doing?
Yep, I know he had Robinson, great game on Saturday night in Toledo, goal and two assists, and he really just controls that puck super well. And you still hope that he and Gender could get on the same page, but boy, he and Moon seem to already click.
Yeah.
And Beaulieu's just your scrapper winger that's going to go in there and clean stuff up. And I really like today Robinson and Beaulieu playing together shorthanded.
Yeah.
And Robinson got a partial breakaway that he just couldn't finish off. And they were really solid on the PK.
Yeah, Todd and Beaulieu was one of the PK groups, and the other primary pairing was Dale and Mahovsky, and I like those two as well. They almost generated a couple chances as well. And today, at even strength, Ginder was with Mahovsky and Shelast.
Yep.
And you saw some things there that you like with that, too. It's just a matter of, we've talked about it again and again, it's just a matter of continuing to tinker and try different combinations, and hopefully you'll find something that works. And once you catch lightning in a bottle, then you stick with it and ride it as long as you can. But so far, nothing is clicking on all cylinders, except now maybe the first power play unit's looking a heck of a lot better than it was. But at even strength, none of the lines are still blowing the doors off of people.
I made the prediction last week that the Iceman would win three in a row. So close. And we talked about it a little bit last week. You know, that Toledo game was going to be the rough one. I thought the day game here on Tuesday would be easy. It wasn't. So no celebration for me. But the one question I will throw out to all of the fans out there is, okay, this Iceman team wins two out of two. I have a little hiccup today. So if you are an anti-Crom guy, if you are an anti-Robinson guy, and you see them win two games, and Robinson's a big part of that, Crom's team's coming along, you either have to back off your Crom thing, or you have to say, I still want him fired even though we win. You know, those are the, you make that decision, you post it on Facebook, you got to live with it, or you got to give the mea culpa, I was wrong here.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to play armchair quarterback, but just because we started the season 0-6-1 and we lost another one today, that doesn't.
And we're going to lose another one tomorrow.
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's time to just blow it all up and start over again. We went into opening night. Everyone knew this first year in the ECHL, we got a lot of potential, but it could be a struggle because it's the first year in a new league. And when the decisions were made to bring back Rich Crom as head coach and bring back Todd Robinson, yeah, some people, myself included, were a little concerned about Robinson's speed at this level. But it's not like anyone was saying, oh, well, we shouldn't have brought him back. That's just not going to work, period. So it's easy when you're 6-7 games into the season and the team's struggling to suddenly change your tune. But where were all those people calling for their heads before the season started? Maybe those people weren't crazy in love with either one of them, but at the same time, they also weren't calling for their jobs yet.
Exactly, and no one wants to hear it just because they got 4 or 5 or 6 losses. Or if you do want to say it then you better ride it out for the whole season.
Yeah,
and
you can't change your tune as soon as we win a couple games.
Tomorrow night, Greenville again, 7:15 here at the Ford Center. Then Friday, Fort Wayne away. And then back here Saturday should be a great game against the South Carolina Sting. This Greenville team is for real. Boy, yeah. They just, if you want to watch good hockey, come to the Ford Center tomorrow night because both
tonight.
Oh, yeah. Right. Tonight. I forget.
Yeah, we record this.
But, yeah, if you want to see two really good teams, come out and support your Icemen and watch this Greenville team play because they are fantastic, all three lines. Now, the goalie got banged up, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Big tie up in front of the net. Puck was loose. He dove for it, and I think he tweaked his right knee.
Yeah, and there was a pile up of guys on top of him and around him, too. So that's one of those things where it may be, quote-unquote, a minor injury, but when you're a goalie and you need optimum performance and being able to move and go down and get back up in a hurry and lateral movement and all the things that go into goaltending at this level at the speed of the game, a little tweak, a little groin injury, a little muscle pull, that can keep you out for a couple weeks. So it didn't look that bad, but it looked like the type of thing that probably will keep him out for Wednesday. So I would imagine we'll see Nathan Lewian, whatever his name is.
There you go. You thought you were going to pull that one off really smooth. Like,
I don't know what it's. Can I buy a Valpath? It's an interesting last name, but we'll probably see him today. Although he's the guy that had started most of their games going into today. So he had started 5, and Stacher that played today, that started today, had only played 2.
So. Speaking of goalies, we laugh at goalies because they're so weird, and the people that love them were weird. And Rob Medor, his jersey was the highest paid for jersey at the auction last week. Holy crap, did he play awesome today.
Yeah.
And he made 40 saves. He gave up 3 goals. You couldn't fault him on any. In the second period, he had 2 six-shot flurries that led to saves. And then there was a 5-shot flurry in the third period, and he was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. The World Warriors came out really strong early in the third period. They were going for the gusto, and I think they had 8 or 9 shots like 4 minutes into the period, and Medora was standing tall. He was really, really strong. And that's the kind of goaltending you need on a consistent basis, because this team obviously is having some trouble lighting the lamp. So if you can get goaltending like that on a regular basis, then that takes a little bit of pressure off your offense, that you figure, well, maybe we only need to score 2 or 3 goals to win instead of having to score 4 or 5.
I'm interested to see what Coach Crom does. Do you go to Medor again Wednesday night and then play him in Fort Wayne on Saturday or Friday night, and then have Carpo come in on Saturday? You know, that's part of the decision making all these coaches have to do too. Is he too tired? You know, all it takes is to be off a little bit, and you're not at your best. One extra goal comes in, that could be the difference between a win and a loss. And one other thing I'll say is, playing at 9:45 in the morning, we saw a lot of weird little things today that you don't normally see because guys aren't ready to play at 9:45 a.m. It's just odd. We had 2 Icemen crash into each other on a crisscross play. We had 2 Road Warriors crash into each other the exact same spot 1 period later. The ref got hit with a puck on a clearing attempt. A linesman fell over in a corner. A linesman got plowed in neutral ice. It's just being off a little bit. It is huge, and it leads to goals and goals against. And so, you know, how are you going to play as a fan? You're the coach. You're Rich Crom. How are you playing your goaltenders the rest of this week, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think normally you would say, well, in a back-to-back, if you face 40 shots in the first game, you're not going to play the second game. But this is kind of an oddball back-to-back because the first game's at 9:45 in the morning. So I think you could go back to Medor on Wednesday. But if you do that, I think you sit him on Friday. I think you go with Carp on the road on Friday, and then you could play Saturday by ear. If Carp plays really well, doesn't see a ton of action, you could play him again on Saturday. But I got a feeling we're probably just going to keep seeing the rotation. In general, Crom likes to do that unless one guy is just crazy hot. I figure we'll probably see Carp on Wednesday and then Medor on Friday in the road, and then probably go back to Carp on Saturday at home, unless one guy just lights the world on fire. And sometimes, you as a coach, you just have to wait for a guy to make a decision for you. You can keep rotating, but there comes a point where if you get really hot and you play really well, you can make the decision for your coach, and you take it out of his hands and just say, I'm hot. You're not going to take me out. Because if you do, you're going to sacrifice the chance to win for this team.
We harp a little bit on experience, you know. Whatever you're saying about the Icemen, try to back it up with experiences you've had at some level. And as a high school coach, we had 2 goaltenders. They were both sophomores, and it was a tough decision because when you have to tell a goalie that he's not starting, it's not like another player. He has to sit on that bench in all of his gear for the whole entire game, and it's tough at any level. You know, guys are playing for contracts at this level, and kids just want to play at the EYHA high school level. And when you got to sit a kid down and he just operates the door for you, it's a difficult thing to do. So don't think it's just a super easy thing to say, oh, put Medora in net. You know, he's playing great. I don't, you know, Carpo lost the first game of the season. I don't want to go back to him. It's not that easy.
Yeah, and it's almost more mental than it is physical. Yeah, you want to keep a guy limber and keep him so that he can perform when called upon, but at the same time, it's more about getting in a guy's head. And if you sit him too many games in a row, or if he has a bad game and you don't give him a chance to redeem himself, it just festers. And over time, you can ruin a guy if you don't give him enough action. Now, that being said, you still you still want to give yourself the best chance to win, but there are times when you may have to play the guy that in a vacuum you wouldn't necessarily play, but you have to think about the bigger picture and keep both guys ready to go, because if you ride one guy too much and he gets hurt, or if he cools off, or if he gets called up at this level, then you've got a big problem on your hands if your other guy's rusty and just out of it mentally.
And no confidence. Yep, exactly. All right, you got that sheet. Is there anything else we need to cover here?
Well, I just thought I'd share a little behind-the-scenes story. Friday, I know the fans were very happy when the Icemen finally won a game.
You're not going to make me cry again.
No, I'm not. No. Hopefully, I'll make you laugh. So, Friday, the game ends. I go to take paperwork down to Coach Crum in the locker room, and I'm about 100 feet from the entrance to the Icemen locker room. And people may not know this, but generally the rule in locker rooms after a game is, if you win, you can play music. If you don't, it's quiet. Well, there's been a lot of quiet so far this season. So Friday, I'm walking down, and I'm 100 feet from the locker room door, and I can already hear the music. There's rap music blaring. And I walk to the locker room. I turn into the room. And as I'm walking to Coach Crum's office, I see a naked hockey player raising the roof as he walks back from the shower to get dressed. And I'm like, you know, normally when I see that, I'm going to turn and run the other way. But it was totally worth it because we won a game. And it was this weird mental image that is permanently etched in my brain. But that's the kind of things you see when a team finally wins a game. They're just, like I said earlier, I think it was definitely happiness, but more than anything, it was relief. It was that weight off their shoulders. And when you finally win a game after you've been struggling, sometimes that can snowball. One win turns into multiple wins, and hopefully we're on the brink of that. And we've got two of them. We need a lot more of them.
Yep.
But it's a start, at least.
He is Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster and vice president of Off-Ice Shenanigans. Oh, and we've got one more thing.
I do have one more thing I need to pass along. Saturday's game, the Superstars are going to be there.
And
there's a post-game skate.
And Matt Spaeth, ECHL linesman extraordinaire that was on the ice, instrumental in our first win of the season.
That's true.
I had to call in a favor for that. You all owe me. But he will be here in town as well, so we can expect a perfectly officiated hockey game. But anyways, back to the Superstars.
Yes. The Superstars will be there Saturday, and they were here twice last year. They played opening night and the finale. And if you haven't seen the Superstars, you need to come out on Saturday because they're a lot of fun.
I actually feel like a horrible father because I have date planned for the game and after the game with the wife, so we weren't going to bring the 5-year-old, but oh my gosh, the Superstars are so funny, and all she talked about was, like, the first time she saw him, the whole car ride home, all she said was, they ate somebody. They ate somebody. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you've got to come out and see Saturday night.
It's one of those things that the visual defies explanation. It's just you have to see it to see it. There's no way we could explain it and do it justice. It's definitely worth the price of admission. Should be a good crowd on Saturday. It's our first Saturday game in a month, and I think we'll probably easily be over 5,000, maybe even 6 or 7, depending on how the walk-up crowd is. Like I said, also, they're doing a post-game skate on the ice. And it was originally announced as a season ticket holder skate only. And I talked to Kara after the game today, and she said because I've heard it both ways, and she confirmed that it is not just for season ticket holders. It is for everyone. They will have skate rental available. So come out and see the Icemen, see the Superstars, see Matt Spaeth, referee,
or
lining the game. And it is the only time South Carolina comes to town, too, so it's a unique opportunity from that respect. But then after the game, stick around and hit the Ford Center ice, and the Icemen usually stick around, and they'll be out on the ice, and you can get your pictures taken with them and see them and hug them.
They're awesome.
Do whatever you want to do with them.
And for all you Fairweather fans, you can tell them face-to-face what you think of them. See if you got the cojones to do that, because I got a feeling most of you just like to do it on Facebook.
You know who has cojones? You do.
Yeah.
Because you said we were going to go 3-0.
Yeah.
You're close, but no cigar.
Yep. So, but anyways, he is Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, Icemaninsights.com. Go there.
Try it again. You got it wrong again.
Senior writer, webmaster, vice president of off-ice shenanigans, Michael Shockley, Icemen, maniacs.com.
There we go.
Go there for all of your hockey information for Evansville, all of your Iceman propaganda, not propaganda, promotional.
Yeah.
We are not
all of our propaganda.
I am not above being underwritten by the Iceman and serving up propaganda, but until that happens, you are listening to Iceman Insights. Thank you all, and we'll be back next week.
See ya.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.